The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, May the 1st, 2022. And I'm joined today by my co-host, the one person who it's a complicated situation to get into. He loves Microsoft Edge, yet at the same time, he does not realize he is not, in fact, using Microsoft Edge. Oh, no. He's using Google. Oh, no, he's using Mozilla Firefox. Until today, we have forced him to make the big switch over, the big transition over to Google Chrome, because we have Chris Gull. Welcome.
It's good to be here. I use Edge at my workplace, and I forget that I use Firefox here at home.
I would really prefer to be using Netscape, I think.
Netscape Navigator, that was the first one I ever used, all right?
Yes. We have, for people watching on YouTube, it's a whole new world today. Had some issues last week. Hopefully we'll not have some issues this week. We finalized our negotiation with StreamYard. We came to terms. Mainly, that means that we are now paying the subscription fee. Yes. But hopefully this will go well today. I like it so far. But anyway, it is May, and it snowed this week, then on the final week of April. Winter ends in April, I think, in Buffalo. But yeah, what's going on with you, Chris Cole?
Not much. Well, you know, it's been a beautiful weekend so far. A little chilly, but finally
it was nice yesterday.
Did the front lawn, you know, put out some new mulch, spruced up I got the cherry trees. Hopefully this is supposed to be the year they bring cherries. So we'll see.
Really?
This is
a multi-year quest or what?
Yeah. So cherry trees don't actually, like, when you plant them on their like trees, they don't actually produce fruit until 3 to 4 years in.
You're a regular George Washington here.
Well, I told you about my edible landscape. I got cherry trees. I got strawberries, blackberries, and raspberries and blueberries all on my front lawn.
Sorry, bushes. I forgot you really like your edibles. That's right.
Well, I mean, Sunday morning, everybody.
Anyway,
but we got a fun show here. We're going to discuss how really determine the TV rights value of AEW and WWE programming to the networks, and we're kind of get really deep into details with that when it comes to ads and whatnot. But we're going to kind of start off today with Warner Brothers Discovery. I believe they had a Q1 earnings call, and also there's been some shuffling of the deck when it comes to their programming, especially their scripted programming, and how that's going to affect AEW being under the Warner Media Discovery umbrella as a program.
Yes. Doom and gloom. It's all over for AEW, I think. It's all over. They might want to look into foreclosure plans or something like that. No, we'll get into it. If people want to send in a super chat, Chris Gull, how do they do such a thing?
Yep. So just right under YouTube, you'll see the little dollar sign, and you press that, put your question, or you can put whatever fit starting at $1, and we will answer them throughout the show.
Okay. I'm just getting used to this this whole experience here. I'm seeing the number of people filing in here to the stream. There were people lined up around the block for this one today. There's a traffic jam, I think. They're hanging from the rafters. But, yes, where would you like to begin?
So, yeah, we actually have some audio to start us off today here. We got Gunnar Weidenfels, the chief financial officer of Warner Bros. Discovery, and we're also going to hear from David Zaslav, of course, the CEO of Warner Bros.
I love this picture. I love this picture of David Zaslav. For people listening in audio, he's outside. I believe this photo is from credit to the New York Post for this photo. He's like outside. I feel like the paparazzi must have been following him or something. He's wearing some shades. He's wearing like the kind of vest that a multimillionaire media CEO would wear. And he's like pointing at you like, yeah, I'm gonna cut your program.
He looks like a proud grandfather. Like, oh, yeah, good job.
Okay, so earnings call Tuesday. This is the first earnings call while they're merged. I believe the way the financing, the accounting works out is like it's part of quarter one, I think. But anyway, the merger is finalized between Discovery and Warner Media. And here is a montage of clips from Tuesday's earnings call.
And finally, synergy.
Here's David Zaslav.
We have been working hard for months and are now validating and executing against those 200 plus work streams. The attack is strategic, operational, structural, and financial. We will clearly take swift and decisive action on certain items, as you saw last week with CNN Plus, while others will take time to formulate appropriate action plans. Prior to that,
I
wanted to share some high-level priorities that we were digging into early on, as well as some initial financial and operational observations since close. Number one, content. I'm working very closely with our creative and financial leadership teams to examine the totality of our $23 billion plus of annual content spend to analyze the ROI of each dollar spent. The goal of this exercise is not to identify ways to reduce what we spend on content, but to harmonize processes and analytics. We intend to drive for the highest level of financial discipline here to make sure that every dollar spent is purposeful and measured. This will prove to be an enormous opportunity for cost synergy capture across the globe and within each and every business line, given the significant overlap geographically and operationally.
Just wanted to get some perspective. Obviously, you made some decisive decision on the CNN Plus, shutting down. Are there a lot more opportunities across the Warner Brothers businesses that can result in material saving of costs going forward that you've sort of seen? Could help the long-term cash flow story.
But I think the bigger picture here is, as we've said, 2022 is going to be noisy, and you've mentioned some of the factors that are going to flow through. But if I take a step back here and just look at, call it the past 15 months for Warner Media, sort of as a carve-out group, we're looking at more than $40 billion of revenue and really, virtually no free cash flow. And right or wrong, management has made a decision to invest a lot of, the incoming funds into a number of investment initiatives. And as I'm looking under the hood here, again, CNN Plus is just one example, and I don't want to go through sort of a list of specific examples, but there's a lot of, chunky investments that are lacking what I would view as a solid, analytical financial foundation and meeting the ROI hurdles that I would like to see for major investments. And so this is an opportunity. We're going to be able to continue the initiatives that make a lot of sense and reallocate some.
Okay, so this is an opportunity, big opportunity. It's not a bad thing. It's an opportunity. So a lot of that, again, was from the CFO for Warner Brothers Discovery. That is the merged entity that we should be using from now on. Warner Bros. Discovery, the CFO, Gunnar Weidenfels. The first comment that we heard was from David Zaslav, the CEO himself. A lot of interesting comments there. Some chunky investments. Do you have any chunky investments that you're working on, Griscolo? Is your cherry tree a chunky investment? Some concern. Let's see. What does he say here? As we have it on the screen, a lot of chunky investments that are lacking what I would view as a solid analytical financial foundation and meeting the ROI hurdles. What does ROI stand for?
Return on investment.
Yeah, and he's referring my, you know, he's because we have this quote on the screen here. If we take a step back here and just look at it, called the last 15 months of Warner Media. So it sounds like he's referring particularly, he's the Discovery guy, right? The Discovery has won the leadership struggle here because Zasloff is the CEO. He's the Discovery CEO originally. And they're talking about Warner Media in particular, CNN Plus, which they allude to, we talked about last week, CNN Plus, the streaming service that's been cut. That was a Warner Media project, right? That they decided to go forward with regardless of maybe concern from the Discovery side. It sounds like he's talking about some decisions that Warner Media has made, some projects that Warner Media is doing, working on, that maybe aren't a good investment, good projects, that don't make a lot of sense financially, such as CNN Plus. What else might he be talking about? They're really talking about AEW, aren't they? They're talking about AEW, right? Right?
No, what I think he's talking about is really, and we'll kind of get into a little bit, is a lot of their scripted programming. So just to give a kind of a background to, you know, the people listening out there, Discovery, you know, before the merger, I don't have an exact percentage, but it's mostly non-scripted television. It's a lot of, hey, you know, let's fix your house. This is cooking show. Food Network. True crime shows, you know, in the documentary style, but not a lot of sitcoms and dramas and shows that of that sort, where that's where TBS and TNT thrive. TNT, we know drama.
You're about to get into it, but they really don't have a ton. But why don't you tell us about this Variety article that came out later that morning on Tuesday, talking about the future of scripted programming for, I've learned a new term, the T-Nets. The T-Nets. Do you know what the T-Nets are? Can you guess?
Guess.
Look at the slide.
TBS, TNT, and True TV, the T-Nets. Yes. Okay. All right.
Who's in charge of the T-Nets?
Brett Weitz.
Yes. Brett Weitz is the supervisor of, what's his name? Sam Linsky, who is involved, who oversees, yes, I believe that's what his bio says. He oversees the relationship with AEW. So presumably Brett Weitz has a lot to say about whether or not whether AEW is going to do this or that on their networks and maybe about those negotiations. We're going to talk about in quite a bit of depth today. So what is this Variety article?
For the Variety article, which was on Tuesday, just after the earnings call, TNT and TBS are pausing the scripted game under a new parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery, under CEO David Zasloff, has promised we'll find $3 billion in cost savings across the new company in the post-merger era, Variety learned exclusively. The Warner Media run cable channels is no longer developing new scripted content. Three sources close to it, close to the matter, tell Variety, according to one insider, Warner Brothers Discovery leadership is currently evaluating the strategy for all of the so-called T-Nets, including True TV, which are run by Brett Weitz, and will have a better idea of the role each will play within the new regime moving forward. It's unclear what will happen at TBS and TNT's current slate of scripted programming, but for the moment, it apparently is status quo for the returning series like Snowpiercer.
Yes. So one foreseeable concern that one might have is that, is AEW going to be considered live sports? Presumably, if you're live sports, you're more valuable than if you're scripted entertainment, not to mention this sort of revelation that scripted programming is going to get cut. If AEW is scripted programming, because it's fake wrestling, rather than live sports, maybe AEW is vulnerable. Maybe. So I figured, let's take that for granted. Let's take for granted that AEW would be considered not live sports, but scripted programming. And where does AEW land in the universe of, I didn't look into True TV, which is a lower profile network compared to TBS and TNT, but I did grab all the Showbiz Daily, everything that Showbiz Daily has since 2019, since actually October 2019, which is when Dynamite debuted, grabbed all of that information and said, where does Dynamite land in the world of the scripted programming? I excluded all the sports, right? NBA would dominate this if we included the sports. Where does AEW programming land in the universe of the TNT and TBS scripted originals, or at least things that showed up on the Showbiz Daily list, which are some movies, movie marathons and so forth, which are not original programming. But nonetheless, what we end up seeing here is, since AEW has been on TNT or TBS since fall of 2019, in terms of the number of programs, it's pretty high up there. I grouped all these movies together. I left Christmas Story apart from those, just because of the, I don't know, Christmas Story seems pretty popular when they run it on Christmas. But it, Dynamite has had, you know, I sorted this by 2021, and Dynamite's got, of course, 52 episodes because they air weekly. Rampage had 21 episodes because it started in August. So among all of these programs, besides Conan, is Conan all done?
Yeah, Conan's done.
Yeah. So if Conan's done, then AEW is among, I mean, it is the most, if it's a scripted program, it's on, it's got more episodes than anything else. What does that mean? Not much. But if we look at that, you know, all different programs are different durations. We know AEW Dynamite is 2 hours, Rampage is 1 hour. And if you add Rampage and Dynamite up, that's over 7,000 minutes of content, which is more than any scripted program for sure. So a lot of volume of content. Now, how does it do in terms of a rating compared to everything else? Let's look at the 1849 rating. It averaged in 2021. Dynamite averaged a 0.34 in the demo. Rampage averaged a 0.25 in the demo. Certainly lower for Rampage in 2022. But that's averaging better than anything except for A Christmas Story and this one sneak peek edition of The Cube. In other words, it ranks pretty highly among scripted programming, if we're including it in that category, its rating that drives the ad rates. Even in total viewership, not as highly, but you know, it's in the top, what is this, 7 or so, which includes, does not quite as high, basically tied with Animal Kingdom, Snowpiercer. Have you ever watched any of these shows?
I have not, no.
Okay, me neither. That's fine. So watch time, though. I want to think about, Not you know, it's not just important that, yeah, you do a good rating, and that you could be doing a good rating for 10 minutes for all we know. I want to know how much time, how much watch time are you supplying the network with? More watch time, that's highly rated, the more valuable, theoretically, you are to your network if all other things are equal, which of course they are not, but if they were. And Dynamite provided the most watch time of anything except for this grouping of movies. And if we added in the Rampage, it would exceed the movies with over 2 billion hours of demo watch time. So there's that. In terms of total viewership watch time, it's number 2 as well. It's behind the movies. So we got a bigger non-demo audience watching the movies. And then I wanted to break this down in terms of efficiency. So I call this brand in metric. P18 to 49, watch time per hour of content. You're advantaged in terms of providing volume of watch time if you've just got a lot of hours on the network, right? So I'm trying to ask, who's making the most of that time? And number one is AEW Dynamite by far in 2021. If you add Rampage into that, it's even more of a lead over everything, including movies and including this Friends marathon, including A Christmas Story. So there's that. That is also the case for P2 Plus watch time per hour of content. So there's that. So I don't know. Suffice to say, what? Dynamite does pretty well among scripted programming. It's kind of the most valuable. I would say this would lead me to believe, if ad rates were equal, which of course they are not, that Dynamite is the most valuable series that the TNT and TBS have, unless there's some hit on True TV that I'm not aware of.
And Practical Jokers, maybe.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's that. And then I know there's some concern about what Battle of the Belts has become and is.
All right. So Dave posted this on the board.
Dave who?
Dave Meltzer.
Oh.
Dave Meltzer, yes. The Dave. You have to read between the lines on Battle of the Belts and what it was supposed to be and what it is. It was a public sign of a decision where it showed that side, the network, was winning the argument at the time. It also has nothing to do with ratings whatsoever, but of people who weren't hot on wrestling because it's wrestling.
Yes. Translate that into from Dave to English for us. Could you do that?
So I'm assuming that, you know, the battle of the belts, like it being a thing, was something that the network kind of made AEW do, it seems like.
So that battle of the belts was basically something given to AEW from Turner, Warner Media, whatever we should call it, is in exchange for the inconvenience of moving Dynamite from TNT to TBS at the beginning of this year. That timing coincides, right? Because we've had one in January, one Battle of the Belts special in January, another one in August, as we can see the date on the screen, April 16th. But I did talk to Dave a little bit about this to, you know, get an idea of what he was thinking. Because he's been very cautious lately about the idea of what AEW is going to be valued at in its next TV round, which is what I'm going to really get into in a little bit. So the Battle of the Belts was, according to Dave, was originally supposed to be longer, is what I'm getting here, right? It was supposed to be maybe like a 2 to 3 hour special, like a Clash of the Champions, almost like a pay-per-view that would be on TV. And it's ended up being how long? How long are these specials?
They're an hour, aren't they?
They are 1 hour. And yes, every match is a title match, but in many ways, it just kind of feels like an extra hour of Rampage on a following day. So there are many cases where the network has turned down ideas that AEW has pitched. And the network has also, I'm told, gone out of its way to help AEW. But yeah, like I said, the Battle of the Belts was basically a gift for the inconvenience of switching their networks, because Warner decided that they wanted to put the NHL on Wednesday night instead of Dynamite. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Battle of the Belts being an hour was disappointing for AEW or for Tony Khan. And maybe it was supposed to be, maybe at one point, you know, Tony expected it to be 2 to 3 hours, was disappointed when the final decision was made that it was only going to be 1 hour. So there's that. I think AEW would also like to be on a streaming platform of some sort, like HBO Max. That's not happened yet, though. And I think AEW is going to end up doing its own streaming service, a FAST service. What's FAST stand for?
Free ad streaming television. Or ad supported, yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Yes. So, but Warner Media has also not sort of helped AEW get onto a streaming service. Is that a story? Should that be added to this negative story? I don't know. But yeah, as we discussed, there's another concern that Warner Discovery will view AEW as sports or entertainment. We'll see what happens in the upfront, if we can get any details out of the upfront that's coming up in a couple weeks here. And if that gives us any clues as to how AEW is positioned, if it's positioned as scripted entertainment, whether it's positioned as live sports. You do notice, though, if we're getting way into the weeds of Showbiz Daily, Showbiz Daily publishes this listing of weekly sports TV ratings. And it, until AEW existed, I don't think that, and until WWE moved SmackDown to Fox, I don't think that it ever included any wrestling on it. But now, let's say in 2021, it started to include two wrestling programs, SmackDown on Fox and Dynamite on TNT. Since the new year, it is now only including SmackDown for whatever reason. Now, these listings from Showbiz Daily, I mean, I have no idea what the method is that determines why Showbiz Daily includes some wrestling programs in its sports TV ratings listing and not others. It has never listed Raw, which perseveres to be valuable regardless. It has never included NXT, which I don't think is very valuable regardless. It has never included Rampage. We know that SmackDown is overseen by Fox Sports. So maybe that's part of what's happening there. We know that NBC Universal, the sports division, if they have one, is not overseeing. They have a sports division probably, right? They're not being overseen by sports labeled people, Raw. They're being overseen by, I don't know, NBC Universal Entertainment or something. It's being looked at as entertainment. Nonetheless, though, it's live and it's Raw is generating $4 million per episode. So that's still happening. And the key for whether or not you're a valuable property, in my view, is whether or not you're live, whether or not your ratings are highly ranked. Raw continues to be highly ranked. Dynamite on Wednesday, to a lesser extent, continues to be highly ranked. So that continues to happen. So I know people are listening to what Dave is saying and are concerned about whether or not AEW is going to be able to attract strong TV rights fees, because look at, and we've got WCW in the rearview mirror here, and AOL Time Warner in the rearview mirror. And we know that executives can make major decisions and affect the pro wrestling industry in a big way. And we just listened to the most powerful two executives in that picture, probably. And it does sound grave for scripted programming on the T-Nets. But I think, and I just tried to lay out the data, even if AEW is considered scripted programming, it's the most valuable scripted program that they got. I think they're still going to be positioned as live sports in the upfronts. All this is maybe is just secondary to the fact, though, that Dynamite continues to be highly ranked in the demo. It's live. It's somewhat DVR-proof. Not as much as the NBA is, I'm sure. Wrestling straddles this space between sports and scripted entertainment. That is, people will watch it on DVR to a greater extent than they will sports. But they do try to watch it live more so than they do scripted programming. So there's that.
Yeah, and maybe this is something you can go in a little bit forward here, but kind of a question comment here. So the narrative obviously has changed a few years gone on with the large TV rights deal that WWE has gotten, but we always heard that old analogy, and you would hear from people like that pro wrestling is cheap television for networks. It's, you know, it's cheaper television than what they normally would do. And with a $45 million a year deal right now where AEW currently has, I would imagine that's probably cheaper than really almost any of those scripted programs that was on TBS and TNT.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, those scripted programs can be rerun. You don't really rerun AEW, but in terms of the amount of new first-run content that you get, if you're talking about a scripted program, you probably get like 22, 23 episodes in a year. And then they're probably about 1 hour. Now, what they cost to produce, if the network is footing the bill for the production, could be, it will vary widely depending on what the program is. But let's say, I don't know, $5 million is probably kind of a median, I would guess. $5 million. I'm going to have to break out the calculator, and we don't have the screen shared here, but we'll do it. $5 million times, let's say 22 episodes, let's say 23 episodes. $115 million a year for, let's say, a typical scripted program for a year. And you only get 23 episodes out of it. And what does Warner Media pay, or I guess we should say Warner Brothers Discovery pay, per year on an average annual basis for AEW, Dynamite, and Rampage? Yes, both of them. Yes, including Battle of the Belts. I don't believe they're paying much more than $44 million a year, which... where does that number come from? It comes from, among other things, Tony Khan tweeting $175 million across 4 years. So that's less than half the cost. AEW is giving them 3 hours weekly for $44 million a year. Again, compare that. That comes out to, I believe, $800,000 a week, something like that. You know, compare that to a scripted program, which would produce about a half year worth of content, less than a half a year of content, for, I don't know, multiple times more than that, over $100 million in a year. Wrestling is cheap content. Maybe the ad rates aren't great, might not be, but wrestling is pretty cheap content. And big unknown to me is what they can drive in terms of covenants in their carriage agreements with cable and satellite distributors. But it continues to be cheap programming and efficient programming in terms of the eyeballs that it aggregates.
All right. So with that, we want to move on to some WWE programming news.
Yes.
So WWE revealed the name of its first major stadium event to be held in the United Kingdom in more than 30 years is WWE Clash at the Castle, emanating from the Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Wales, on Saturday, September 3rd, 2022. Tickets for WWE Clash at the Castle will go on sale Friday, May 20th. Andrew Zarian reported Wednesday that WWE is expected to expand its number of stadium events even further in 2023. Zarian wrote on Twitter that for WWE, the goal is to make this the new norm, and that it's a Nick Khan approach to the promotion's premium live events. He added that once the live attendance exceeds 15,000, it becomes beneficial for running the stadium, even if they are only putting in 35,000 or less, rather than selling out the stadium, which is going to be dependent on various rates from different stadiums across the country and internationally. And that summary comes from, of course, our partners at Post Wrestling.
Yeah. So that sounds to me like a stadium for every premium live event, maybe. And that would, I know they have the entire calendar set for the year, but maybe next year, 2022, at least more, according to Andrew Zarian, what he's hearing, more stadium events to come.
And I'm not surprised, you know, especially it is a very Nick Khan approach. It's that sports feel, right? Where are sports games in stadiums? Big time sports games. Big time sports games are in stadiums.
And NBA games are in NBA arenas.
Yeah. Okay. But NFL, I mean, NFL's most popular sport. EPL is probably the most popular league internationally. Yeah. So, and those are in stadiums. This logo, though, can we talk about this? I think I told you off air, this reminds me of like a WCW 1994 event, like Clash at the Castle, Bunkhouse Buck in the main event. Like,
what's that? I stopped watching Nickelodeon like when I was, I don't know, a preteen or something, but the Thornberry, the Wild Thornberries or something like that, or even kind of like gives me Rugrats vibes in terms of the artwork here.
Hey, Real Monsters, like,
that artwork, yeah, for sure. But no, the tickets go on sale on May 20th. So we'll see. I know, and Alex McCarthy has tweeted that there were, you know, something like 50 or 60,000 pre-sale registrations or something like that. So this could sell out immediately. We'll see. WrestleTix, I'm sure, will be watching closely. We'll see if when do the New Japan Forbidden Door AEW New Japan show tickets go on sale for the United Center?
I don't know. I mean, that has to be soon, because that event's what, in end of June, correct?
Yes.
So it has to be soon. I mean, this is this will probably do well, very successful. I mean, wrestling in the UK is, to my knowledge, still very popular, even after the pandemic. And I think this will be very successful. And the stadiums, he's really international approach, like, because you have your big four, big five that you could do in stadiums here, but then maybe just do these specials, you know, these premium live event specials all across. And that way, too, they could be like, look, we're not only giving Saudi Arabia a stadium show, but we're going to the UK and we're going to Australia. Well, they might even do one in India. Who knows?
They've done live events in India, around the Jinder Mahal. That was the last time they were in India, for the Jinder Mahal, right after the Jinder Mahal title reign ended. I think they in part cut that title reign short because the advances on the events that they scheduled in India were not good, because and they had to cancel one of them. So I don't know that India, at least this point, or at least last time, so that was 2017, so maybe things have changed since then, but I don't know that India is a strong live event market for them. Certainly it's a strong TV market for them. Are these going to be events that need a stadium, or are these going to be events that, stadium events that need a card? What did somebody say? Is this a stadium show that needs a card, or a card that needs a stadium show? Is this going to water down, for one thing, maybe the WrestleMania brand as the event that's always a stadium and kind of a special spectacle, because I mean, now it's 2 days, even, you know, it's all sort of in line with WWE's willingness to churn out more content. I think of the comment that Nick Khan made to Ariel Helwani when Ariel was asking about the 3-hour Raw. Is that too much, or like, what, you know, what do you think of that? I wish it was 8 hours, was his response. You remember that?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I actually do. Yeah.
So, maybe the events are more attracted to business partners this way, and maybe it's more attracted to sponsorships this way because you're in a big stadium. It feels like a grander thing. I don't know. WrestleMania, 3 hours, 3 hour Raw, two hour WrestleMania. And so far, financially, this works out for them. WrestleMania makes more money at the live gate because it's 2 days, sells more merchandise because it's 2 days. Raw generates more in terms of TV rights revenue because it's 2 days. Assuming that running these events in a stadium doesn't increase the production cost, in excess of the extra revenue that they're bringing in terms of tickets and merchandise and whatever else they're able to justify here, that it will probably continue to work out for them, at least in the short and medium term. I question whether things like this, including 3 hour Raw, including two hour WrestleMania, including making everything a big event and maybe running some of these events in stadiums that aren't nearly full, if that erodes some of the specialness of these events and erodes some of the passion that your fans might otherwise have for your product. But anyway, moving on.
All right. So Mamana, you kind of preluded it to a little earlier with the upfronts coming up for Warner Media, which will kind of, I mean, I don't know how much programming they're really going to feature in these upfronts.
What's an upfront?
This new program. So an upfront is basically like, hey, look, this is what we got coming on in the fall season. You know, these are these programs and all that. And here's some sneak peeks and that kind of, that's for advertisers to want to be attached to these programs.
Yes. So why don't you tell us what was in Ad Week this week about the upfront?
Yeah, here. So, this is from Jason Lynch. So Warner Brothers, Discovery will hold its combined upfront on Wednesday morning, May 18th at the Madison Square Garden's Hulu Theater. According to the company, the presentation will showcase Warner Brothers Discovery's differentiated and complete portfolio of content, brands, franchises, and talents to the clients, agency partners, investors, sell-side analysis, and press. Marketeers have several questions about Warner Brothers Discovery as it officially opens for business and how the two sales teams will be integrated. Selling the NBA is much different than selling Discovery ID, said David Capinelli, Chief Investment Officer of Horizon Media. So putting those things together will probably take some time. As for the upfront negotiations themselves, marketeers have told the team that it will be full steam ahead as single ad sales entity, said Capinelli. Everyone's been as honest as they can be, saying we're going to figure it out. We're going to try to make this upfront as smooth as possible, said Carrie Drinkwater, the Chief Investment Officer of MediaHub. They have made it clear that there will be not any disruptions. Or I do believe this upfront will be as business as usual, but there is no usual business anymore, so I'm not concerned right now. And that NBC Universal's upfront, just for a side note, is May 16th at Radio City Music Hall.
Yes. So Discovery and Warner are merging their upfronts. Again, that's happening on what day? That's happening on May 18th. Oftentimes, there'll be announcements coming out of these upfronts that are relevant to wrestling. Dynamite was announced to be a show that's happening on TNT in the 2019 upfront. Maybe the Rampage news was broken last year. I don't remember at an upfront, but there's that. We'll get some news coming out of that. Maybe I can ask some sell side analysts if they attend and if they have any takeaways from how AEW was presented. So there's that.
All right.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we will move on here until, what were you calling it? The main event to me off air? The nitty gritty? Yeah. The big part of today's
show?
I would
never use a term like nitty gritty. No. No.
Well, I like nitty gritty, Vince. Yeah, so determining what the actual TV rights are for WWE and AEW in a lot of factors, which, Brandon, I'll let you dig right in here.
Well, what do you think? Is AEW – so let's talk about the timeline here, which I've got on my mug here, and I think you do too. WWE – we're talking about WWE and AEW here too, because we're not – I know Golo wanted me to only talk about AEW, but I said, no, we have to talk about WWE too. He's like, I hate WWE. I was like, no, stop it. But anyway, timeline here is Raw and SmackDown. Their timing is aligned. Thank you, Nick Khan. Raw and SmackDown expire September 2024. That's when their deals expire. And AEW, 4-year term would expire December 2023, but there's a 1-year option added on to that. I'm going to show the mug, which you can get at store.postwrestling.com. I don't know if it's actually readable. In fact, I'd have to put my, there we go. Oh, it's real blurry. Yeah, it's not going to work. Anyway. So that's late 2024. I would say I expect Warner Brothers Discovery to use the option and extend AEW. They might not, but I think they will, because of how valuable that show is. Yeah. NBA is more valuable for sure. Probably by multiples. But what's their number two show on the T-Nets? NBA's number one, as in terms of a property, let's use that word. AEW's probably number two. Well, this is the NHL. They can probably justify pretty good ad rates, maybe even carriage fees for the NHL. So maybe NHL is number two. Maybe AEW's number three.
TBS still has baseball though, right, too?
You're right. TBS has baseball. Thank you for pointing this out before people yell at me. Is there anything else there?
I don't think they air college sports unless they do the tournament.
Yeah, you're right. They do have March Madness, so that's definitely up there, at least for a short span of time. But I think it's pretty valuable is what I'm trying to get at before I say it's more valuable than other things. So what's your impression? Is AEW going to get an upgrade in TV rights fees? Is WWE going to get an upgrade in TV rights fees?
I think both will. I mean, just look at the market of live TV sports rights. Networks are clamoring to get those rights, and they're paying more than probably what they're even worth. Unless you're the MLS, then you're having a tough time. You're still getting an increase, but you're having a tough time.
Yeah. There's some uncertainty thrown into the water here because what's happening with streaming? And Netflix is no longer a growth company. I'm saying that against my book here. Netflix appears to not be a growth company anymore. Appears to be a value company, as MJ from NJ has taught me. So we know kind of where the growth, the growth that ends where, who knows where it ends. We know now. It there's still maybe incremental growth to extract here, but Netflix subscribers stopped growing sequentially. So maybe that makes streaming less of a player here. I don't know. We'll get into it. But main point to start with here is AEW, when you just compare it to WWE, assuming that's a valid comparison, when you just compare it to WWE in terms of the watch time that it's delivering, the hours of eyeballs looking at the linear content, what does AEW provide in terms of total viewership? And if you put them both in a donut, WWE and AEW, okay, I'm talking about Raw and SmackDown. I'm not including NXT because NXT is too lowly ranked, I think, to be included in this. That's my opinion. Raw and SmackDown, Dynamite and Rampage, put them in the same donut. How much of that donut, in terms of watch time, does WWE account for? 81%. That's a lot. 81%. That's more than the majority, right? Dynamite providing about 19% of that donut. That's in total viewership. Not totally sure what to value more, whether total viewership or the demo. If you're of the demo religion, well, Dynamite and Rampage are providing about a quarter of that donut. Raw and SmackDown providing about three quarters of that donut. So WWE dominates. WWE rules the world. Don't worry. Everyone's acknowledging Roman. Settle down. But when in terms of the money that these two companies are getting from their live TV rights, AEW's only getting 9% of that donut. Again, 19% of the watch time, 26% of the demo watch time, only 9% of the money. Those bare facts would lead me to think that, I mean, what's 27 divided by 9? If I go back to my elementary math, I think that's three times. Maybe AEW is going to get their TV rights multiplied by three times, but there's more to this story though. So there's at least, I would say, six factors. Five of these factors go one way. One of these factors goes the other way. That will determine all these factors that will determine the value of WWE and AEW's sports rights fees. This would be valid for sports in general, I think. Number one is the bidders. You're a homeowner, Chris Gallo.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
How many people were bidding on the house that you now own?
This, we got lucky. It was just us. But the house before that we lost out on, there was, like, I think they told us, like, 15, 20 bidders.
15, 20 bidders?
Yes. It was probably half of that because, you know, they're real estate agents are just like car salesmen. So, but they're always going to overdo it. But yeah, I mean, it's a bidding market. But yeah, I mean, this house, we got lucky. But yeah, that we lost out in multiple houses.
And if this house, you were the sole bidder.
Yeah.
If there were one other bidder, what would that do to the price of the house?
I definitely would have paid more for what I did. And I actually gave them 10 grand under the asking price. I would never have been able to do that with another bidder.
If there were 10, 20 bidders, what would that do to the asking price?
I'm probably paying 1.5%, like, you know, times and a half of the value of the house or what they're asking. Yeah.
So it's basically supply and demand, right? This is sort of by definition. If there's more people interested in your product, whether it's a house or whether it's AEW's TV rights fees, you're going to be able to, as a homeowner, as an owner of content, you're going to be able to justify a higher price for that product than you would otherwise. So regardless of even all these other factors, I think that's the strongest influence. But the other factors are your ratings. How big is your audience on a kind of semi-logarithmic scale? What the hell does that mean? Basically, that means that the more highly ranked you are, the more valuable your content is, because you are providing a larger audience than other products can. And we live increasingly in this linear TV world where the more highly ranked you are, the more distant you are from your competing programs. We don't have a slide for it, but it basically looks like a reverse exponential line where it goes, it's really high at the top and it curves way down to the bottom. So NXT is really similar to a lot of programs in terms of the demo audience, in terms of the total audience that it draws. NFL basically stands alone at the top of this line. A bit below that is a bunch of NBA programming. Bit below that is some MLB programming. College football, March Madness. These properties do really well. They rank really highly. What we're seeing right now is the NBA playoffs dominate TV. Even about, you know, these NBA playoff games where I think we're still only in the first round, doing better than anything on broadcast, even though they're only on cable, they're on ESPN or TNT. So the more highly ranked you are, it's really hard. It's not like the number one show does a 1.1, the number two show does a 1.0. No, these shows are vastly ahead of things that are below them. So being highly ranked, even if you're Raw on Monday, even if you're Dynamite ranking, let's say number 3 on Wednesday, that's still pretty special, and you're still providing a volume of audience that very few other programs can. When I do the weekly tables that I've been tweeting, you do see Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite in the top 150 or so of all programs on cable or broadcast for the given week. So anyway, ratings and your rank among programming generally matters a lot. Ad rates. How much do your ads get purchased for? And then volume. We were sort of touching on that earlier in terms of comparing a scripted program that only has 1 hour, only has, say, 23 one-hour episodes per year compared to wrestling, Raw, that has 52 three-hour episodes a year, AEW producing 3 hours per week also. So the volume, how much content are you getting? And then your synergy, how effectively does your content drive viewership to other places, whether that's Miz and Mrs., whether that's the Go Big Show, whether that's Roads to the Top, or as some call it, Roads to Stanford, whether that's, the Steve Austin, whatever that show was called, and so forth. So all of that matters. And then your reach matters in the opposite way. What do I mean by that? The smaller your network's reach is, the more I think the wrestling content provider is justified in asking you for more money. If you're going to put me on a streaming platform, I want more money because I'm going to have less reach. And part of what you're providing to me as a wrestling content provider is an audience. That's really important for me and my other businesses, including the ticketing business, including the merchandising business, including the pay-per-view business. If I'm AEW, I need a really high reach platform. Ideally, I want to reach the entire population. We know, given the nature of media today, that it's hard to reach the entire population, but linear TV is still the way to cast the widest net. 80 million homes. There's no streaming platform in the United States that's got 80 million homes. Cable still has 80 million homes. At least the big networks on cable do. So if you're going to put me on streaming and I'm going to be in like 30 million homes, maybe, then I need to be paid more because I'm not getting the value of being in more homes. So that's something to keep in mind. So let's proceed. In terms of WWE and its bidders, do we want to like just jump ahead here? I don't know. In terms of its bidders, obviously we know NBC Universal is going to be interested. Fox is probably going to at least make a bid. And then possibly, I think we have Disney. We have Paramount, maybe. Amazon, Nick Khan is hyping. I think less likely is Netflix and Apple. I think we'd skip past this. I kind of just said all this stuff. So just to set the table here, the average annual value of wrestling and of some competing, maybe comparable sports properties. This is U.S. value here only, because that's what we're talking about today. Premier League just got an upgrade, $450 million a year. They're the leader of this group that we're going to look at right now. $450 million average annual value for the Premier League. Its deal with NBC Universal. $400 million for the NHL on ESPN, mostly on ESPN Plus. Raw is worth $263 million, which we say often here. Hopefully everybody at home has that memorized now. NHL on Warner Media on TNT, that's worth $225 million. That's what people call the B package of the NHL games. So not as high profile as the A package that Disney/ESPN has. SmackDown on Fox is $205 million, and then there's AEW with just $44 million that's for everything. People ask me this, but didn't they get an upgrade? I don't think so. I don't think they got more money for going to TBS. But what about Battle? No, I don't think they got more money for Battle of the Belts. I think Battle of the Belts itself was a value that they were giving. What about Rampage though? They didn't have Rampage at first. Aren't they getting paid more for Rampage? No, I don't think they are. I think that was the original agreement in January 2020 that they were going to provide a third program. So there's that. So what bidders are we looking at here? NBC Universal, Fox, obviously, maybe Disney, maybe ESPN. I know there's interest from ESPN for the Peacock rights that Peacock ended up getting, right? Would ESPN put wrestling on their networks though?
ESPN 2. I think ESPN too, for sure.
Does ESPN want fake wrestling on their legit sports networks though?
I mean, ESPN too, they'll have cornhole tournaments and lumberjack competitions and stuff like that. Like I feel like ESPN too, they wouldn't mind putting it on there. I don't think it would ever have the ESPN featured spot, because on that spot you're gonna have NBA coverage, NHL coverage.
You're gonna be like preempted that. A lot if you're gonna get that in.
But ESPN too, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
ESPN two's in a lot of homes. And I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure almost every home that has ESPN has ESPN2. Now, ESPN2 is a lower profile network, obviously, than ESPN flagship network, but it's better than not being on TV at all. But it's better to be, in my opinion, on TNT or CBS or USA Network, and certainly it's better to be on Fox.
You also are part of the ESPN Plus streaming package too, in the aspect of like. So if you're on ESPN2, you're also accessible on ESPN Plus, but they also have a lot of stuff that's just exclusive to ESPN Plus. It's usually like a lot of the college sports games across. I mean, they literally cover almost everything now in the college game.
Could you see wrestling on Amazon Prime Video?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't. Didn't they have like that? Oh, it was a Lucha Underground style show, but it was like. It was like these people had to like wrestle up the rankings or whatever. It was like one season. I'll find out what that was called. Okay. That was on Amazon.
The problem with being on streaming though, and UFC's doing it, so maybe maybe it's working out for UFC, is that the reach is greatly diminished, right? And I think that's why we see, in part why we see, it is the A package, not the B package, in part why we see the NHL getting $400 million, because most of those games are on ESPN Plus with lower reach. So I think the NHL is able to justify a higher price tag because you're going to take some of the value away from us by not putting us on a high reach platform. You're going to put us on a lower reach platform. It's an important platform, yes, but it's a lower reach platform in ESPN Plus rather than ESPN Flagship Network, for instance. Apple TV, I don't see getting involved in wrestling. The Apple TV brand is too pristine, is too special, too protected to certainly at this stage of their involvement in sports rights. Now, granted, this wouldn't be until like 2024, 2025, but yes, they're doing baseball. Have you watched any of these baseball games on Apple TV?
I have not yet. Apple TV is one thing I do not have, and I think I need to get it for baseball.
You gotta find somebody to share their password with you.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's really neat. But if they get the Sunday ticket, I'm just gonna do it.
Oh, yeah. You're an Android man. You're a Roku man.
Yep.
You're a Firefox man.
But anyway. I like Edge too. Chrome, eh?
So if Apple had a lot of other sports properties, maybe then they would make the step into wrestling, but I don't know if Apple, I don't know if that fits their brand. And like kind of likewise for Disney Plus. You're never going to see wrestling on Disney Plus. Unless it's bundled with ESPN Plus or something. Like on the same interface. So what other players are left here then?
Paramount. I mean, such a long history of wrestling.
Yes. What's Paramount's biggest cable network?
Is it MTV?
I guess so. Yeah. Wrestling's not going on MTV in the 2020s. I don't think, there's always the Paramount Network, which is where Yellowstone lives, which is the biggest hit in scripted programming right now on linear TV. The Paramount used to be called what? The Paramount Cable Network. Cable Network.
Spike TV, sorry.
Used to be Spike TV. Before that, it was TNN. So that's where Raw used to live. Not inconceivable that wrestling could be on that network.
ECW, Raw, and Spike TV were all on that network. TNA, I'm sorry. We're all on that network.
Right, right. Wrestling on CBS broadcast, I doubt it. But it's on Fox. Who would have thought that, you know, several years ago? So Warner Brothers Discovery obviously going to have interest in maintaining, retaining AEW. We know that AEW had discussions with Showtime. I was aware of that. And Kevin Sullivan, not the taskmaster, but Kevin Sullivan, the producer who recently retired, right, has said that publicly, that there were discussions between AEW and Showtime when it seemed that Turner was maybe running cold on the rights, which they ended up buying, obviously. So Showtime would be a big step down because of the number of homes that it's in. It's only in like half the cable homes. It's a pretty good branded network, but to go from TNT / TBS to Showtime, that would be a pretty significant step down in terms of reach. And you would have a lot fewer people watching AEW, and that would hinder AEW's growth as a company. Maybe here's a really wild idea. This is the real fantasy booking. What if Gull, this is your dream. What if Fox flipped? What if Fox said, I don't know about this SmackDown, a little bit disappointed in this. And then they signed up for AEW. Doubt that's going to happen, but that's not impossible. Doubt that's going to happen.
And would they put AEW on Fox or not, or just put it on FS1?
Yeah. And we've seen the difference in viewership when SmackDown is on Fox versus when it's on FS1. The viewership falls more than in a half. You know, SmackDown will do over 2 million viewers. It looks like in the last 2 weeks, it's done under 2 million viewers, just under. But it's done like a million viewers, sometimes less than that on FS1. Just to give you an idea, you're in the same umbrella, but just by being on FS1, which is in a lot of homes. I don't know off the top of my head, but I think it's in nearly all of the cable homes. The viewership dropped dramatically for the most watched wrestling show in the U.S. just when it changed to FS1 from Fox. So there's that. Who else is going to bid for this AEW, though, other than Warner Brothers Discovery? Maybe Viacom. And again, this is the biggest factor, besides all this other stuff we've talked about up to this point about, oh my God, is it going to be live sports or is it going to be scripted? Is the issue around the Battle of the Belts, is that showing that the network is needed by AEW more than AEW needs the network? I just said the same thing twice. You know what I mean? Who needs who more? The biggest factor is there going to be another serious bidder for this? And I don't know. There isn't an obvious one to me. I guess Viacom makes the most sense. Maybe Fox, but that seems less likely that they wouldn't just... It seems more likely to me that Fox will just renew SmackDown. Because SmackDown is a cheap program for them. It does pretty well. It's often number one in the demo on Friday night in a week night among the other weekdays. So I think that's what's going to happen. Any of these streaming players? I don't think so. ESPN? I doubt it. But maybe there's somebody else here. I've been assured that it won't be that hard to find another bidder, but there isn't a super obvious one to me. Now, in the case of WWE, we've got Nick Khan hyping Amazon. Maybe Amazon is interested. And again, I believe that there's going to be some sort of streaming rights dealt. More likely WWE than AEW. There'll be some sort of X number of Raw episodes that are on streaming or something like that, or NXT will be sold as part of this to Peacock, maybe. I don't know. So that's what I see happening. It could be more complicated than this, of course. You know, who would have ever seen coming that, you know, in 2018, WWE would sell SmackDown over here and Raw over there and get a lot more money because of it. Maybe there's room for AEW to sell Rampage to a streaming service and to sell Dynamite to a traditional player. Lord knows. Now, AEW is solely owned by the Khan family, right?
Well, I think we discussed this a couple of weeks ago that we think that Warner may have a small stake.
I think they do. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I believe that Warner Media, and now I guess it's Warner Brothers Discovery, owns a minority stake in AEW. And I don't know how that plays in. If that's true, I don't know how that plays in terms of if I'm, say, Viacom. I don't know. Do I want to bid for AEW and thus heighten the value of an asset that's owned by one of my competitors? I don't know if that's a big deal or not. After studying all the advertisers this week, I watched a lot of commercials. Me and Jason Opercer watched a lot of commercials this week in preparation for this. I did see, though, like, and I don't know if this was a local commercial or if this was actually broadcast nationally, but there's like a Paramount Plus commercial on Dynamite, I think. So they do seem to be... It's not unreasonable for them to, say, advertise their competitors' products. So... whether that's a big deal or not, I don't really know how to read. But this is the biggest factor. Don't have any great answers for you here. But I'm sure Nick Khan will get more than the incumbents interested. I, unlike you, have confidence in Nick Khan's abilities, Chris Call. So there we go. Now, on to ad rates. As we know, AEW is violent, gory crap, and Vince McMahon is sick of it. Blood and guts and things of that nature. Nick Khan slicing people's heads open while there's Domino's commercials. Aaron on the picture-in-picture screen.
You mean Nick Gage, not Nick Khan slicing people open? I want to see Nick Gage with the pizza, or Nick Khan with the pizza cutter.
Yes, yes. Nick Khan cuts people in other ways. No, he doesn't. Vince McMahon does. Anyway, we know in the Toronto Star, WWE laid it out explicitly. If you look at the gory self-mutilation that bloodied several women on the December 31st event on Rampage on TNT, it quickly becomes clear that these are different businesses. We had an edgier product in the Attitude Era, but in today's world, we don't believe that type of dangerous and brutal display, quite frankly, I'm interjecting here. We don't think that that kind of display is good for networks, for sponsors, for venues, for children, and quite frankly, for the general public as a whole. So WWE is trying to paint AEW as violent. It certainly is more violent than WWE is. Is that an issue for advertisers? Who's going to tell you? Now, on the other hand, I could look at some things that WWE's done and say, I don't know, do advertisers love it when Jeff Hardy throws urine in the face of Sheamus? That happened on SmackDown not that long ago, in this term, like less than a year ago, right? I don't think WWE is like this high-minded brand either, in large part because of the kind of comedy and gross out humor that they do sometimes. Maybe that matters, maybe it doesn't. But with some help from Jason Unpreser, we watched all of the ads and wrote down what they were. Have you looked at the slide yet, Golo? Have you had a chance?
Yes, I'm looking at it. Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to go over every brand that had a commercial. People watching on YouTube can see on the screen. What we've got right now is every brand that had a commercial on Raw this past week, and every commercial that had an ad on Dynamite on TBS. Now there's more in the case of Raw, just because Raw's 3 hours, so there's more ad space there. Dynamite's only 2 hours. As you look at this list of advertisers, does either set, the Raw side or the Dynamite side, does either set of advertisers look more expensive to you? Look like, oh, these advertisers maybe are paying higher ad rates. Who's got the better set of advertisers on a quantity adjusted basis?
I mean, just from the naked eye, they look pretty comparable. I think so. Yeah.
There's a lot of, I have an opinion about this. There's a lot of advertisers that are on both. In fact, I always like to like watch TV shows and then think about the advertisements and be like, what kind of person are they imagining I am based on the advertisements that are being placed during this commercial? If you're watching wrestling, either program now, because again, a lot of the same ads, you're vaping a lot, which you shouldn't. You're driving under the influence. You're texting while driving. You love pizza. You've got a lot of people vying for your pizza dollar here. Every pizza brand under the sun is advertised during Raw. Pizza, Domino's, Papa John's, something called Marco's, Little Caesars. You're a big fan of fast food, including Taco Bell. Every Yum brand under the sun is on Raw. But here's why I think Raw is charging higher ad rates. Obviously, it has a larger demo audience, but look at Toyota. It's a car commercial on. There's a couple car commercials on Raw. No car commercials on Dynamite, at least this episode. I don't know if there has been in the past. In terms of expensive products, there's a lot of jewelry commercials on both. Right, Jared is buying ads on both. K Jewelers is buying ads on Raw, also not on Dynamite though. So yeah. I was surprised that there were NBA playoff ads on Raw when NBC, maybe it was just a Sling commercial, but when NBC Universal does not have NBA and is competing with the NBA as it was airing. Interesting though.
I think you're burying the lead here. You know, everyone talks about Cody Rhodes jumping from WWE, but look at this, look at these comparisons. Domino's solely on WWE programming in this comparison. The big jump.
Yeah. Did Domino's stop advertising with them because of Nick Gage? But Pizza Hut, everybody. Does Dynamite have any pizza spots? They have Marco's Pizza, which I've never heard of until now. Cricket Wireless on both. It's worth noting too that WWE has a couple ads, including the Cricket Wireless commercial, including a DoorDash commercial that includes WWE talent. I imagine WWE is able to charge NBC Universal is able to charge a premium because of that, that's working out to somebody's benefit there. That's making WWE happy and or their network happy. So there's that. Advertisers appear to be more valuable in my read with Raw than with Dynamite. We did this for SmackDown and for Rampage 2. I think it's largely the same story. Right? Every Mars brand under the sun, Snickers, Kit Kat, Twix, a lot of Mars brands. We do get a T-Mobile here too, in addition to Cricket Wireless. But I think there's not a lot more to say here. A lot of consumer products, of course. There's a Honda and a Hyundai commercial on SmackDown and a Jeep commercial. So car commercials. Again, no car commercials to speak of on AEW programming. That tells me, that the WWE ad rates, even besides the difference in viewership, is probably greater. So there's that. And then we talk about the factor that I call synergy in terms of does Raw, does Dynamite serve as a good lead-in for other programming? They seem to be about even. Rose to the Top wasn't this huge hit. It's not like Dynamite served all these viewers up to the NHL. Yet, on the other hand, if I look at the last 2 hours of Raw and compare it to what the 2 hours of Dynamite delivered on the occasions where we do have showbiz data to tell us what was on after these wrestling programs, it's pretty comparable in terms of the audience that they're able to retain. But we do see, all these different brands, like let's talk about WWE first, in terms of look at how WWE is able to maybe kind of work together with its business partners, with its TV partners. Peacock, it's good to have Raw on USA Network when you're trying to drive Peacock subscribers to make people watch WWE content and pay for WWE content on Peacock. I think at this point, NXT is a supplemental program also. You get more people to put ads on Raw to say, hey, look, what's going to be on NXT the next night? Triple H used to try out this line about how, it's good to be on Tuesday because Raw is the following, the previous day. And you really get people, I don't know about that. I mean, if anything, NXT viewership has obviously fallen. But anyway. You had Sasha Banks show up on the NBC broadcast of the Daytona 500. That was on NBC, right? Am I getting that right? Or is that Fox? Straight Up with Steve Austin was on after Raw. It's no coincidence. Miz and Mrs. did really well in ratings in its most recent season with Raw as its lead-in. WWE Evil has aired after Raw and has aired after NXT in recent weeks.
This is probably a deeper question and probably something we could ponder weeks forward, but WWE does a very good job at cross-marketing their superstars, even on, we talk about this network, but, I was watching the NFL draft on Friday night, the second and third round, and Baron Corbin, Titus O'Neil, and Miz were all there doing picks for their teams, and, it's something that just AEW doesn't really do.
Right. I think part of this, I was just going to kind of jokingly say, but you don't see, Adam Page showing up on NBA games, do you? No. I think part of that is WWE has cultivated a really strong relationship with its networks, right? And part of that just has to do with WWE has had more time to do so. And they've been a brand that has existed longer, and the company has had more time to develop these relationships and make these things happen, would be my guess. I'm sure there's a lot more to it. Maybe someday things like that happen for AEW. In the case of Warner Media, we have seen though things like Jericho show up on Foodies, and Rose to the Top was a show on TNT. You see Rosario Dawson show up on Dynamite, Snoop Dogg jumping off the top rope, Cody Rhodes, former AEW superstar, showing up on and being a regular, right? Regular cast member on the Go Big Show. Maybe meaningful that he's no longer with AEW. What does the network think of that? I don't know. And we saw a strong AEW presence on the first upfront after AEW joined Turner. So there's that. Certainly, I think we're identifying WWE has a stronger relationship with its networks than AEW does at this point in terms of what the wrestling company is getting out of it. So volume, let's talk about volume. How much content am I giving you as a content provider? In these most recent deals that we're talking about, and I think these are good deals to compare wrestling to. Why? We're not talking about the NFL, which is way up on the food chain. We're not talking about the NBA, which is next in line. We're not talking about the MLB. We're talking about Premier League, which does similar ratings. Actually, wrestling does better. We're talking about the NHL. Wrestling does better ratings in the demo, anyway, than these sports do. Premier League dealt. So this is kind of an estimate on my part, I should say. But I took the number of games that they're selling to these networks, and I just multiplied them by the average duration that I saw in the Showbiz data. So we're talking about 850 hours of annual content for Premier League, which is vastly more than any of these other peers that we're looking at here. Just over 300 hours of content for each NHL deal with Disney, with Warner Media. And then about half that for Raw, 159. Same for Warner Media's deal with AEW, 3 hours of weekly content. You think about that, like Raw, in terms of hours, obviously, right? It's 3 hours of Raw a week, 2 hours of Dynamite and Rampage. So the same, virtually the same. SmackDown, 106 hours a week because it's only a 2-hour program. So that's the quantity. That we should be keeping that in mind because that comes out to, if nothing else, ad space, right? So next, I want to think about, we've talked about the value. How much are these programs worth on an average annual basis? Now, and I want to talk about, you know, how much content is happening here. So if we just divide one by the other, what is the price per unit? And we've got a wonderful picture here. What store is this, Skull?
I mean, that's definitely Wegmans.
What's Wegmans for those who don't know?
It is a grocery store chain. I would say it's like not as high end as like a Whole Foods or a Sprouts, but like above your Costco's and your Publix and Tops and, you know.
So when you go into the produce section, we know that bananas are whatever, 49 cents a pound. Iceberg lettuce is $1.79 a pound or whatever, right? So that's kind of how I want to think about this, is what is the value of these entities, of these properties per hour? And if we break it down by average annual value, divided by time, by the number of hours that you're providing. And on a per unit, per hour basis, SmackDown is the most valuable of all these peers. Almost $2 per hour is what we're getting out of SmackDown in terms of what they're being paid. Raw, $1.02, $1.67 for Raw, the second most valuable property. And then we get NHL, its deal with Disney, $1.26. NHL, its deal with Warner Media, $0.73. Premier League, because they're selling so much of it, NBC is really buying in bulk here, gets Premier League for just 53 cents an hour. And then that's exactly half that, right? Just about exactly half that, 28 cents per hour. Yes, that's Dynamite and Rampage combined, 28 cents per hour. You go into the produce section, you want to pick up some AEW, it's only 28 cents per hour. So AEW is the cheapest property here. Not a surprise given what we've talked about so far. This is just the point that I'm trying to make earlier, right? That part of the reason why I think the NHL ESPN deal is so much more valuable than the Warner Media NHL deal, not just that it's the A package rather than the B package, but you're going to pay me more because you're going to put me on ESPN Plus because you're going to reduce my reach. Why is the Premier League NBCU deal worth so much? Partly it's because I'm giving you so much content, but partly it's because you're going to put a lot of my games on Peacock, which is going to have a lower reach for me, which is part of the value that I'm getting out of this relationship. So we've also got another issue that I don't think we've ever talked about too, is the uncertainty around streaming. So streaming in any, whatever these streaming platforms are, you know, we're talking about maybe 20 million homes in the US that these streaming platforms are in. You know, we've got Peacock at like 24 million monthly active users. The ESPN Plus number is probably public somewhere. I don't know what it is though, but I imagine it's in the realm of 20, 30 million homes, something like that. Now streaming is growing. I still think streaming is growing, especially these newer businesses. Yes. Netflix has reached saturation point, but these other, streaming platforms are still new enough businesses that they're probably still going to grow for the foreseeable future. Eventually, they'll hit a saturation point too, though, sure. But cable has not only more homes, about 76 million homes, but probably declining, probably going to continue to decline over time. But the streaming platforms just are less stable, at least until somebody really bundles these up into a few services in terms of people are canceling their streaming service at any given point. They're canceling and trading in one service for another quite frequently. Nobody does that with cable. You're either in or you're out. You've either cut the cord and you're never coming back, or you've not cut the cord and you've had the cord for years. So a lot of stability with cable, a lot of inconsistency maybe with streaming. Another factor there. For that reason, I want to compare these wrestling programs to probably not NHL's deal with Disney, because that involves streaming. I believe that wrestling is going to live primarily on linear TV in the next round. Yes, there might be a streaming component to it that might really help out the extraction of more money for the wrestling companies, especially WWE. But probably we don't want to compare this to an ESPN Plus deal. Probably we don't want to compare this to a deal with Premier League that involves a lot of Peacock. It's not just Peacock. It's on USA. It's on NBC too. But there's a lot of Peacock in there. So I think we're not going to end up in a situation where most of the content for wrestling is on a streaming platform. Again, I could imagine Rampage being on a streaming platform. But, you know, probably not going to end up in a situation where a lot of that content is on streaming. I want to talk about something that's primarily a linear deal. So we're going to talk about, we're going to focus as a comparison point, the NHL and Warner Media deal, where NHL is airing on TNT. I should probably be calling it Warner Brothers Discovery at this point. You know what I'm talking about, though. At least, you know, NHL is, yeah, it's got double the amount of content than Raw or AEW, and definitely more than double SmackDown, but it's in the same realm. We're not talking about 850,000 hours of content a year like Premier League. We're talking about 300 compared to 150. So we're going to focus on NHL and Warner Media as perhaps the most comparable peer in this group, which I think, I don't know, we're going to find a more comparable sports peer for these wrestling programs. So now what I want to do is look at what, let's take your TV deal and let's divide it by the watch time. And as I was saying last week, every time, every hour goal that you spend in front of the TV watching SmackDown, you're not generating, but you're justifying 44 cents for WWE to be on Fox. Every hour that you spend watching Raw, 31 cents lower, in part because NBC Universal is buying in bulk. They're buying 3 hours a week rather than 2 hours a week like SmackDown. Every hour that you spend watching AEW programming on linear, 11 cents, just 11 cents, as you know, not surprising given AEW is a much cheaper property. Compare that to 69 cents for the more prestigious NHL on TNT. Now that's just P2+. As it's been drilled into our heads, it's a demo that maybe matters more. It certainly generates ad fees. Nobody ever buys ads based on P2+, based on total viewership. Buy ads based on 18 to 49 or some demo within 18 to 49, if not 18 to 49 itself. And if we look at value per 18 to 49 viewer hour, we're both still in the demo. I'm in the latter half of the demo. I believe you're in your final year of the younger half of the demo. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. I will be 35 in September. So
justify those ad eyeballs while you can. Doesn't last. NHL, because it has a smaller audience, leads this group too. $1.77 every hour that somebody sits on the couch watching NHL on TNT, they're justifying $1.77 to the NHL. It's lower for SmackDown, $1.30. It's lower for Premier League even, because of all the bulk that they're getting from Premier League. 87 cents for Raw, 22 cents, a fraction of anybody else for AEW. So I'm going to make a projection here for WWE first. And then with the projection I make for WWE, we're going to extrapolate the AEW TV rights value. So for WWE, we end up with, as we can see here, between the comparison between SmackDown and the NHL, in P1849 viewers per hour, is a 1.3x difference, 1.3 times. That's for the demo. If we were talking about, we were focusing on total viewership, the difference would be 1.6. So let's just take the median, the rounded median, 1.5x. Boom. That sounds familiar, right? 1.5x.
Yeah.
I didn't do this on purpose. I was, I just kind of sort of had this idea vaguely in my head. Yeah, 1.5x. I think Morgan Stanley has said that too. But you end up with a 1.5x increase. We're looking at SmackDown because SmackDown is a simpler case. It's not this 3-hour program. And then what we end up with, if we just do the math, hit the button on the calculator, and we end up with, SmackDown multiplied to this degree. People can see it on the screen. No point in reciting the numbers. Raw multiplied to that degree. 1.5x. What is that? What AAV does that give us? AAV, it gives us going from $470 million average annual value for Raw and SmackDown combined to multiply that by 1.5x, $705 million in the next round of US TV rights. So $705 million. That's nearly $750 million per year just in US TV rights fees. This would go into effect, if I'm right, this would go into effect in 2024. It would start out significantly lower than this, and then it would escalate each year, averaging 705. So we know we've got a projection now for Raw and SmackDown. Now, using Raw, because Raw is how many hours per week?
Raw is 3 hours a week.
And Dynamite and Rampage combined are how many hours per week?
3 hours a week.
So I think it's sensible to try to extrapolate Raw from Rampage in this case. What the hell do I mean by that? I mean, we're going to take the difference in P2 Plus viewers per hour. It's 45 cents versus 11 cents in AEW's case. What's that a difference of? That's a difference of 4 times. Raw, in its new projected case, is worth 4 times the value per viewer hour that Dynamite and Rampage are combined. That's in terms of total viewership. If we use the demo for that metric, for that difference, we end up with a 5.7x difference. So let's just take the median of that, 4.9x, almost 5 times. So we multiply 4.9 times the current value, which is 44, and we get 214. So again, you end up with finally about $400 million per year for Raw, about $300 million per year for SmackDown, and just over $200 million per year for Dynamite and Rampage combined. And then that, if we put this in the context of the other properties which have dealt their deals already and more recently in recent years, it still puts Premier League, and it still puts NHL and Disney a little bit more valued than any wrestling program, any individual wrestling program. If you put Raw and SmackDown together, they're more valuable than these deals, though, yes. And it still puts AEW a little bit cheaper than the NHL on Warner Media, which probably makes sense to a Warner Brothers Discovery executive, right? That the NHL, I would bet some money that the NHL is justifying higher ad rates than AEW programs are. I would bet that the NHL is easier to justify to cable operators that you should pay a carriage fee, that we should write a covenant in here because of the NHL versus AEW, but maybe AEW could do that too eventually. So it makes sense that a network executive would view the NHL to be a more valuable property than wrestling. So that's where we end up, is with the NHL a little bit more valuable than AEW in this case. That's how the math works out. And this is how the wrestling programs stack up. $700 million a year, hypothetically, for Raw and SmackDown. And just, a third of that, about a third of that, is what Dynamite and Rampage come out to in this hypothetical. So I just made a justification for a 5x increase, if it's not clear. 5x increase. Not 3x, not 4x, 5x. So there's that.
We have a couple super chats. Tim B asks, would NBC allow WWE to go to ESPN Plus and still allow WWE to block Peacock from AEW?
Thank you for the super chat. Would NBC allow WWE to go to ESPN Plus and still allow WWE to block Peacock?
I'm assuming so if the Peacock deal is still entail.
Well, the Peacock, we should put on the table here. The Peacock deal doesn't expire until 5 years from March 2021. So what's that? March 2026? So they don't perfectly align with the TV deal, right? The Raw and SmackDown TV deals end in September 2024. The Peacock deal would not end for like a year and a half later. So there would be a little bit of a, you know, the timing wouldn't align there. What you're saying, I guess, is that besides that, when the Peacock deal is up, maybe WWE makes a deal with ESPN Plus for those content rights. If what MLW alleges in its complaint is close to the truth, it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility that in such a scenario that WWE would not want AEW to deal with its partner, assuming that, you know, Raw, for instance, was still on NBC Universal. I suppose they could pressure, you know, their partner to not deal with their competitor, because we're not doing anti-competitive behavior, but we don't want to be associated with that violent, gory brand. And I don't think, if that's how they phrased it, might not be illegal.
Glenn Kozier, but just to super chat comments, pretty much super chat still solely for the Wegmans mention.
Mm-hmm. I was at Wegmans last night. Just putting it out there.
I was there on Wednesday. And then
you don't go to the one that I do, though, right?
No, I go to the one on Orchard Park Road in West Seneca.
Yeah. Careful now. You're gonna have some WWE fans. They might wait for you there.
I already had a bird thing. I don't remember if we could tell it on air here. I'll do the, you know, bird. Yes. Thing? Let's just do Glenn Codry's that one more from Jake. Glenn Codry's good comment. Glenn Codry's, every TV exec is shaking right now at Brandon's analysis.
Okay.
So here is my bird story. I guess anything's on the table here, Russell Nowick. So on Thursday morning, I saw a bird in front of my lawn that I knew wasn't supposed to be here. It was a yellow.
This bird was a big Roman Reigns fan. I'm expecting where this is going.
It was a yellow-headed blackbird, right? And they're not supposed to be in our region. They're supposed to be in, like, Manitoba, Canada, throughout, like, the Rocky Mountains, and they, like, winter in Mexico, and they go a little west to, like, California. They're not supposed to be here. So I put a picture of this bird in a birding group, because I was like, hey, this is supposed to be here. This is cool, whatever. And I got flooded.
Where this is going.
With messages of people asking me what my address was so they can come and see the bird. This one guy offered to give me bird seed. Oh, drop us a bird
seed.
Where
did you post this?
On a birding group in Facebook, the Buffalo Niagara birding group. And then it was hilarious. Later that evening, I'm like mowing the lawn and there's people literally walking down my street with, like, because I would not give them the address, but I gave them the street just to be nice. There's people literally walking up and down my street with, like, binoculars and cameras. Yes. Apparently this bird's very rare, and I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Big Year, but people take it seriously.
Wow. Okay.
So the bird is the word. Yes. Well, you just said people finding out my address. The bird people all wanted to know it this week. So.
Yes. So we've got all the super chats for now then. I think that's all I had. I don't think we had anything else to pontificate about, did we?
There was the WWE releases on Friday afternoon, which ironically enough, 30-day no competes, and I think that 30th day is after Double or Nothing. But Malcolm Bivens, Persia Parada, Dakota Kai, and Dexter Lumis are the biggest names out of that.
Yeah, Nick Khan will cut them. It's all Nick Khan's fault, right? Is that how it works?
Budget cuts. That's that they got the standard budget cut.
Well, look, I'm sure they decided that they wanted to get expenses down to a certain level, and that's, you know, they've calculated that. Well, maybe we don't need this many talent. Maybe we only need this many talent, and that's what they've done. It's been reported by Fightful that Dakota Kai and Malcolm Bivens, the former, maybe once again Stokely Hathaway. They didn't want to be there anyway, so they were trying to get out. They at least didn't want to re-sign, right? So anyway, anything else to add here before we plug away?
Don't think we really missed anything else notable.
Hopefully that the tech, we're in a whole new world here. Our virtual, we're in the metaverse, I think. WrestleMania is a metaverse company, actually, as well as a media company. Hopefully this stream worked out well. We went fairly long. I feared this might go 2 hours, but I'm glad it didn't. Hopefully the tech worked out. Give us some feedback on what you think of this. We were using StreamYard today, if you're familiar with that. It seemed to have gone well, much better than it has in the past when I was not using StreamYard. I was on my own rogue thing. So we could put the slides up again. So like and share and subscribe on YouTube. Give us a nice review on your podcast app if you liked what we did today. I appreciate everybody tuning in. Today is May 1st. Did you know?
Yes.
If you might be listening to this on May 2nd. This is the best time. Beginning of the month is the best time to get the most value out of a WrestleNomics subscription through Patreon, where I'm doing my TV ratings reports nearly every day. Occasionally, I put out other stuff too. You also get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, and you get access to audio of any extra podcasts that we do. We will be doing an extra podcast tomorrow. I don't know if you want to, you're welcome to join in on this, actually, though. We haven't discussed this, but MJ from NJ and I will be previewing the WWE Q1 earnings call. We'll do that on YouTube, but if you want the audio only version, that's going to be in the Patreon audio feed. We'll be talking about that tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern. That will be live on YouTube. With the earnings call coming up this Thursday. So again, that's tomorrow at 6 p.m. And I think that's it.
Yeah. I mean, you could check me out. Chris
Gallone.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, RTA Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and Rediscovery Unities on Facebook. We just released this past week our part 3 episode. Looks like this is going to be 4 to 5 parts of Burt Prentice, his promotion career. And we cover the end of USWA. And to get a little WrestleNomics-y, there was a report from Dave that the whole USWA, it's a whole thing of that Lawler sold the company, but they really didn't, and this company got screwed, whatever, but that he was led on to do this by an unnamed, very powerful wrestling executive, which could be Vince McMahon.
I guess I'm seeing some of the comments here in the chat. I just want to add that, like, I just laid out like basically a 5x increase for AEW, which I see like Tim B saying that'll be a game changer. The biggest factor about whether it's that, more than that, less than that, are going to be the bidders. I hope we made that clear enough. But I can get to that based on the math, right? I can get to that based on the viewership. So anyway, I guess that's all for now. I'm not as pessimistic or as cautious as like Dave is about what's happening here. I think AEW's, you know, I think there's different leadership here, right? But Bret White's is still there. I think things are going to be fine.
They're not getting canceled. I hear all this stuff on the social media. There's no way they're getting canceled. Yeah. Maybe there's less of a partnership, less collaboration, but I don't think they're getting canceled.
And if there truly are other interested bidders, then it matters less. What Discovery Warner Brothers wants. So anyway, that's all for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.